Welcome to Wisdom Personified, Conversations with Dudumsomi, a passionate and relentless pursuit of exploring how individuals use good judgment in everyday life, both in their personal and professional lives.
There is something so comforting about growing in this world alongside people you knew when you were younger. Seeing them charter a successful journey in their chosen careers. I first came to know Ntate Moshesh when she was studying at Natal Technikon, which is now called Durban University of Technology, where she was one of the first graduates in performing arts. Her sterling career has seen her in productions such as Isono, Human Cargo, Home Affairs, and Saint and Sinners, amongst numerous others. She has received the respect for her craft through prestigious nominations and awards over her career and is truly one of the most accomplished actresses on the African continent. Ntate, thank you so much for making the time.
Thank you, Dudu. Anything for you?
So you were born in Katlehong in South Africa, yeah?
Yes, I was.
And so a little bit about your upbringing, because we met when you were tech, so.
Yes, we did.
And do you have siblings? What did you do with your
I've got four siblings. I'm the middle child, typical middle child syndrome.
Yeah.
I lost my older brother 2019.
Oh.
So, the wound is still a little bit raw. And it's amazing, as siblings, you always think there'll always be the five of us. And then suddenly one is taken away from you. And it always feels a little bit odd to now have the even number, because we've always been the odd number. Yeah. And always been the middle child. Now suddenly not the middle child. And so I still remember 1976 very vividly.
Is it?
Yeah, I was 5 years old. And I just remember the hippos. I remember the tear gas. I remember running home and my brother frantically searching for me to see where's my younger sister in all of this chaos, and finally making it home with our eyes just full of tear gas and then the water thing. And it's one of those. So if I had memories that are indelible in my mind, it's 1976. And then not only that, then I saw Gibson Gente perform at DH Hall in Katlehong.
Wow.
And I was never the same after that. And I remember watching those actors on stage and thinking, I would so love to be one of them.
And gosh, the way we used to receive Gibson Kente, anyway, it was
Gibson
like...
Gibson Kente was the doyen.
Yeah.
He was just the god of theater.
Yeah. I think that's how most of us got introduced to theater. Yeah. What was your biggest insecurity as a teenager, if any? How did you overcome it?
I haven't overcome it.
Oh, okay.
I used to have such a complex about my nose.
Really? What about your nose?
I used to feel it's just too big. So I think I think if I could have a rhinoplasty, I would.
Really?
Yeah, just to streamline it and make it look pretty somehow.
I think it's pretty. I don't see the problem, really.
And then when I was pregnant, you know the nose grows?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I remember my father said to me, God, my child is ugly.
Oh, my God.
He said, it's so tough. Do you want to come with me? And I just remember, Dad, like, do you understand that I've already have a complex about this nose?
Yeah.
And then now
you're like, I like it.
Yeah. But having said that,
yeah,
I never allow makeup artists to now streamline.
Oh, really?
No, I don't.
It's like,
no, keep it as is.
Yeah.
I'll get over it maybe when I'm one day. 6 feet under. Just not now when I'm still alive.
No, we're just talking about it. That when I'm thinner, my nose, like.
Oh, so your nose shrinks?
No, it's bigger because I'm small. So when I'm bigger, everything fits.
So the cheekbones stand out.
Yeah.
The nose also sticks
like,
out.
Yeah. So anyway.
So
gaining some has like put things in proportion. But anyway, your father, your loving father, said to you, the day you don't feel the fire in your belly, what to do? You have to stop acting. Have you nearly come to that at any time?
I think I question my sanity every year.
Mm.
Oh, this industry is not easy.
Yeah.
It is such a tough industry.
And then you've survived.
I have, barely, by the skin of my teeth,
yeah.
I think. So I think every year when you do the year ahead, thinking, why am I still doing this? Why am I still, at times it feels like torture. Why am I still torturing myself? Why am I putting myself out there for so much rejection? So much, the landscape has changed completely, Now it's about influencers and Instagrammers and numbers and
you're
followers.
You're a private person.
Extremely private. So having to navigate this landscape that is a South African film and television industry has really been, excuse my French, a mindfuck.
Yeah.
It really has been. And I think I'm constantly trying to survive within it. And then I've got younger actors who then are helping me with my social media because I have no clue.
Yeah.
I really have no clue how all of this works. But I realize in order to get the work, I have to be active on social media. So the privacy part, I can't completely be private because now you have to put yourself out there.
Gosh.
I'm not comfortable.
Yeah.
I'm not comfortable.
You're really being pushed out of your comfort zone.
Completely.
Have you ever wanted to pursue an acting career in Hollywood?
I have done it.
What's it?
The year I turned 30.
What was it?
So I turned 30.
Yeah.
I sell everything. I go off to LA. And my darling father reminds me that when you're 14 years old, you used to practice your Oscar speech in front of the mirror using a hairbrush.
Wow.
So off I go to LA. But because now I'm on a tourist visa, it means you can't get the work. I met a few casting directors. I had an amazing time. I feel completely at home in LA. And now I realize with Tuso Mbedi doing what she's doing, the dream doesn't die.
No, it doesn't.
So there's a part of me that would also love to have enough money to just chuck it all and pursue that dream. Because I realize it'll never die. I wanna be on West End. Yeah. I wanna work in London. I wanna work in Toronto. I wanna work wherever I can work.
I think you're accomplished enough to live in any of those and be an outstanding actress in any of those countries.
Except you know the one thing about other countries, they look after their own first.
Yeah, no.
I wish South Africa did the same. Where we look after our own talent before we look after the rest of the world.
Yeah.
And I remember doing a show in fact my first trip overseas, it was a British series called Soldier Soldier.
Yeah.
And how I struggled to get even the papers right. And when I got on set, the producer said to me, it was very hard to get you here because I had to prove beyond measure that they couldn't get an English actress to play your role that you started in South Africa. That's how much they look after
and yet
their own
same
talent.
Same questions are asked in South Africa. We don't like those questions being asked.
No. And she said it was a real struggle.
Wow.
So my daughter, who I had a South African daughter when they shot in Pretoria, but when I got to London, I got an English young actress to play my daughter. And my husband, who should have been South African, was now British. That's how much they look after their talent.
Yep. In generally, we will. The same conversation is had in business, unfortunately.
Really?
The same conversation. What value do you believe acting brings into our lives as human beings?
Except entertaining you.
Yeah.
Except keeping people sane during COVID. Because without the entertainment industry, you would,
what were we going to do?
Music kept people going. The fact that you could watch, you could stream online kept people going. So for those working from home, you're doing your work at home, the kids are driving you crazy, and now you've got entertainment.
Yeah.
So it plays a huge role. In fact, I feel it's almost the backbone of any country. Mm. It's your arts, because it's the paintings, it's the sculpture, it's the music, it's the acting, it's all of that. Entertainment generally is what keep people sane.
Yeah. I was actually thinking Theatre of the Mind is coming back. When you look at things like Twitter Spaces and podcasts, I mean, there's just the expansion. Also on Twitter Spaces, there was a time where classic pianists were having concerts there.
Yes.
I mean, just...
It's forced the entertainment industry to also look at things very differently. They had to kind of reshape and reimagine how... So what's the future of television right now? So are the big films and the big networks still relevant? I mean, I watched The Woman King the other day, and I went to watch Wakanda Forever the other day. But what's the future of even that? Because now people are sitting at home and streaming.
Yeah. We'll have to find different ways of express. And now with avatars, okay, let's move on.
Yeah.
Because that's another world.
And I don't understand that.
You were featured in the genealogy documentary series, Who Do You Think You Are? I remember when we spoke about it just in 2009. What surprised you most about what it revealed to you about your ancestry?
My mom.
Hmm.
Although you didn't see it in the documentary.
Yeah.
I discovered aspects of my mom that she would never, ever have told me. I realized, I found out and discovered that my mom was a bright spark.
Wow.
So... You see, that's another story for another day, how black mothers hold back their dreams, their aspirations,
for sure,
in order to be the mother,
the
carer, the nurturer.
To give us the security.
Yes. And I turned around and said, Mom, you were a scholar. She says, you just never asked. And I realized, do we ask our mothers? Because I think everything's so about the father's achievements, the father's dreams, the father's goals, the father's aspirations, that we somehow, the mother is just a mother. She's at home. She's a safety, she's a security blanket. She's a safety network. And then when she turned 60, she went back to varsity. I think UJ is now, it was Rao.
Yes.
So my mother got her master's in human resources at the age of 60.
Wow.
And she says, I've always been a scholar, but also I loved being a mother and I loved being a wife. That's not me. And it was okay with her. And she said, be true to you. I didn't see it the way you see it. You thought it's maybe I'm withholding my dreams, but she didn't see it. She says, you don't understand how being a mother fulfilled me, though. Yeah. Being a wife fulfilled me.
Yeah.
Enabling your father to be the best that he could be, it didn't take anything away from me.
That's a choice.
But with me, on the other hand, I look at it very differently. And she said, but I'm not going to stop you being who you are. You want to be a citizen of the world, go ahead. The sky is your limit. I chose to be a mother and a wife. I just chose to be a mother, but not a wife.
Yeah. No. My mom, I think her brilliance always comes through, and I think my father was so generous in always like making me aware, but my mother is not shy about
her aspirations.
No, never shy.
But we need those too.
Never shy. And she was studying until I think 2015.
My mother was still alive, I think my mother would have gotten her like a PhD in social work or whatever.
No, it used to be a joke when I was doing my honors. She was doing her master's. Same campus. Let's move on.
So you cut from the same cloth with your mom then?
Let's move on.
Yeah.
Same campus. No. Okay.
Hi, guys. Meet my mom.
No, like knocking at 6 o'clock in the morning.
Hello.
What life experience has most shaped you as a person you are today?
I think losing my loved ones.
Mm.
Yo, I always try not to get too teary, but I think losing my mom, no one expected it. We didn't see it coming. She was the healthiest person alive. My mother never ate a burger her whole life. She didn't believe in processed foods. She used to grill everything, steam everything. Gymmed. At the age of 50, she went to weigh less. She lost 15 kilograms. She went to gym and she never looked back. So she was gymming even the day before she went into hospital. And I think losing a mother, because I model myself on my mother, the kind of woman that I am, the girl that I was, is based on my mother. And I think losing her completely shifted my axis. And I realize now, more than anything else, I have become my mother. There's certain traits of my mother and characteristics of my mother that I've completely embodied. My son always says, "Mom, you're not grandma." And I said, "Yes and no, my love. Yes, I'm not grandma because grandma was her own person. But I'll tell you what, your grandma was an amazing person. So if I can be half the mother that she was, if I can be half the woman that she was, then I've done something right in my life." Yeah. So losing my mother completely shaped my life. Yeah.
How old were you then?
2009. No, I was old enough. I was old enough. It's been 11 years.
Yeah.
It's been
that journey. Hey?
13. Yeah, almost 13 years. Yeah.
Yeah. I remember growing up and a dad only said about his siblings having lost his siblings because he was, and I could never understand. I mean, they died so many years ago. Why are you still?
No.
Until you lose, it just never gets better.
No. And to do it's a little thing. So I remember my son going to boarding school, and my mother was there when I went to boarding school. And I remember, you know, she walked into the dormitory and she looked at the place and she thought, "Oh, is my child going to be comfortable here?" Okay, yeah. Checking everything else. And when I went to boarding school with my son, and I remember thinking my mother would be checking the curtains.
Yes.
She would have made sure. In fact, she would have packed for him.
Yeah.
And she would have done a better job at packing for him. Yeah. Now, he matriculated, and I thought the first person I would have called would have been my mother. Mom. And she would, in fact, she would have come with me.
Yeah.
At the end of year function at school. So I'll never stop missing my mom.
Yeah. No.
No.
I totally got that. You know, because my dad passed in 2007, my sister in 2006.
Yes, I remember, yeah.
And it's like, it's always like, it's just happened yesterday.
Sometimes
something
like,
happened.
I wish I could just call my sister and share something with her.
Oh, but we always in touch, so that's fine. You studied performing arts in Natal Tech, which is now called Durban University of Technology.
Yes.
How has that fact, the fact that you were professionally trained, benefited you as an actor?
Oh, it's benefited me hugely. Uh-huh. The professionalism, the discipline, the constant getting under the character skin. A drama school shapes the performer that you are because you come in raw and then you've got lecturers who either believe in you or they don't believe in you, who push you in a certain path. So sometimes you don't even know that you've got a comedic talent, and only a lecturer or a drama school can point you out in that direction. So for me, I'll be honest, I prefer working with trained actors because it's just there's almost like a vibe that they have, and I always pick it up and I'll say to the actor, "You trained."
Yeah.
And they say, "How can you tell?" You can tell a trained actor. You can completely tell a trained actor. There's a discipline, there's an approach, there's an ethos to the work. There's an ethic to the work that they bring that, you know, of course, there's always raw talent. There are kids who come in and they got raw talent and they're amazing and they excel. But I personally prefer working with trained actors.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember I used to spend so much time at the Elizabeth Sneyden
Theatre. Yes.
Because Peggy Ngala, who was the other twin, used to be there. And I used to be there like every week.
And he hasn't lost that. All these years later, the training that he has always comes through.
I get that. If you were not here tomorrow, what do you think we'll miss most about you?
Mm-hmm. The fact that I love dancing.
Yeah?
Dude, I dance everywhere.
Yeah.
If I hear music, I can stop my car and park on the side of the road and just dance.
Oh, dear.
Yes. Dancing is my outlet.
Yeah.
So my good friend Motsabi Chelele used to say, "You're a frustrated dancer, my friend. Just be honest." So dancing.
Like
for me.
Explore that part.
Yeah. No, I want to be remembered for the girl who liked to dance.
Yeah. I have my own private moments.
Dancing in front of the mirror?
Anyway, I was in Kenya recently and I attended a Zumba class. And having to keep up.
Don't get me started on Zumba.
And having to keep up, because you're so busy, like, learning the styles.
That's a very erotic dance.
Yeah, I know. So the instructor came after us. He's like, gosh, you're a good dancer, aren't you?
I'm like, ooh. So there you have it. It's there somewhere.
It doesn't always come out.
You did Zumba Bell.
Oh, God.
You're blushing.
I should do it more often.
What is the most courageous decision you've taken in your life thus far? And what drove you to that decision?
Courageous?
Yeah.
I think being a mother.
Yeah. Hey.
So I was never going to be a mother. I was one of those girls going to explore the world, travel, do this, yeah. Do this. And 2002 happened and I gave birth to this beautiful boy. And it really is a parenting right now has got to be the most challenging thing. There is so much going on. There is social media. There is depression. There is suicide. There is drugs.
Yeah.
Mind you, having said that, not that they were not there before.
Mm.
But I think because of social media, they're more highlighted. There's a bigger awareness of the issues that go on. So I constantly am examining, oh, am I a good parent to this amazing young man? But Sabelo, I'll be honest, has made parenting him very, very easy. He's such an amazing young man.
Yeah.
Anyone who knows me knows he's my favorite subject. You know, don't get me started on Sabelo because he's so perfect. It's like oh, and I'm that mother. I'd carry myself and I go, have you seen my son? And he absolutely hates it. Yeah. He hates it with a passion. Like, Mom, please, you know, like, do you have to? And I said, well, you know what? Maybe one day you'll be a parent.
Yeah.
You know, my mom was the same with all five of her kids. She like, oh, my kids. So he'll be a parent and one day, and then I'll say, okay, there you have it. So you see, I wasn't, mommy wasn't like over the top about just going on and on about what an amazing young man he is. But he really is an amazing young man.
Yeah, that's a blessing. I must say, my sister was like that about me. Everybody that meets me, they're like, your sister. Oh, my God. This woman used to love me so much. Everybody had to know about the sister.
But everybody needs a cheerleader. It doesn't matter if it's your wife, it's your spouse, it's a best friend, it's your mother. But somebody's got to be in your corner because you can't do it.
It's like, ooh, was I that amazing?
So, Sabelo Moshesh, you're loved.
Oh, what has been your most emotionally demanding role in your career so far?
Ew, Juju, that's a difficult one. Demanding role emotionally. One of them.
Yeah.
I'll say one of them was when my character had breast cancer, Tandeka in Home Affairs. And I cannot tell you the amount of domestic workers. Interesting enough, just domestic workers used to stop me. A, they really thought I had breast cancer, and B, a lot of them, it kind of went undetected because the loss of a breast for them was tied in with their femininity and their womanhood. Yeah. Mm. So a lot of them said, and then I played golf to raise funds for, so women can have the examination. Mammograms every month, every year. Yeah, that role was emotionally draining.
Gosh.
Yeah. But there have been so many.
Yeah. That's why I asked, because your body of work is so vast.
Yeah, and then that one stands out.
Yeah. Have you ever received negative reviews for any of your work, and how did you react to them?
I have.
Mm-hmm.
I have. I remember there's an article, and the girl says the weakest link in this wasn't Tati Moshesh. Today was devastated.
Wow.
I was so devastated because I wear my heart on my sleeve. Oh. I don't have a thick skin. I take everything very personal. I'm overly emotional at times. And I just remember thinking, wow. But I'll tell you what it did.
Mm.
It kind of made me work harder then. Any role that you execute, it means you must almost become flawless, as if that's really possible. But I think I strive for the best that I can possibly be. Mm. So I become a little bit of a pain on set because I always say to the director, please can I do it again? And they said, no, it was fine. And I think, no, it wasn't fine. Yeah. Because I'll tell you what, I can tweak this or I can tweak that. So I struggled to watch my own work because then I'm always critiquing myself. And one of the things I do bemoan is a loss of art critics. We don't have art critics anymore in this country. Barry Ronger.
I mean.
Barry Ronger.
That man nearly got me to be an art critic. That because I love his work so much.
I used to literally look for every Sunday is look for his crit on whatever he's watched. Adrian Seychelle is another one with dance. So I wish we had more.
No new generation.
Critics, because then it'll keep all of us in check. Because otherwise I won't know that I'm doing an amazing job.
Yeah.
Unless someone says, I'm not sure that I love her portrayal of X or that or that or that.
How she
you know, the US still has,
lots of critics.
So maybe wish, you know, kids that are studying journalism, let's also encourage some of them to be, art critics.
Yeah. Because you know, most people think, oh, of course you couldn't do it. That's how you become a critic.
No.
Because you couldn't do it.
Barry Ronge was incredible.
Yeah, no,
and I remember then his write-up of the very project that I'm talking about was, you know, it was very constructive. So you read something like that and you're like, ah. Because remember, back in the days, the critics coming out used to be such a big thing in the US. The people and actors literally, you perform the one night, it's opening night, the next day it's looking. What are they saying? And that makes you improve your craft in a way.
Yeah. I used to love movies as a child. I used to live in the theater. And also then you hire DVDs and videos at that time.
Yeah.
I used to just live in that world. So, but then I changed my mind. I thought, do I really want to do this for the rest of my life? Because I really did think I'll be a critic.
So maybe you can do it in your other spare time.
Yes,
if you've got spare time.
In my other spare time. What qualities do you think makes one an exceptional actor?
That's a tough question.
Yeah.
What qualities makes a person? Humility.
Oh.
Yeah. Because in a way, you've got to be humble to take on a role. It's someone else's life. There's a true story behind whatever the writers have written. So the humility in order to put yourself in somebody else's shoes without judging them, to be able to portray that character. Because for somebody, it's reading true.
Mm.
There's somebody who's sitting there watching your work and it's resonating. So it's the humility and the empathy to get into a character because we're such chameleons. For every role that you play, there's an integrity that's involved. Honesty that has to be there. And in a way, you've got to be kind to your characters. It doesn't matter. I mean, I've often questioned some of the choices my characters make.
On a moral level?
On a moral level. But then I think, but that's somebody else's truth. You know, there's a reason why that woman made that choice at that moment for whatever reason. Yeah.
Well, not that. Do you trust your own judgment in matters of the heart or
Oh, I'm a hopeless romantic. I don't think. You know what? My younger sister used to say, Tots, not everybody who smiles at you is your friend. So I really am not a good judge of character. I think everybody's kind and wonderful and good. And I think in the 53 years I've lived, I've realized people are horrible little creatures. people are nasty. People are, and mind you, nasty because maybe stuff has happened to them that they now want to inflict whatever pain or wound or scar that they carry onto the next person. I've been in one or two relationships where they were completely narcs, like completely narcissistic, and trying to understand what makes someone be so narcissistic. It's because they're so deeply wounded themselves. So they've got to inflict whatever they're going through
because they're not turning inwardly and healing.
No, and it's always about you and you've done this and you this, you that. And there's an amazing book. I keep forgetting the title, but when I read that book, I think I completely understand what goes into the mind of a narcissistic behavior. Because there's a lot of narcissistic people out there.
Unfortunately, it's becoming the thing to learn about. Do you experience unfair discrimination as an actress, and how does it manifest itself?
The unfair discrimination for me would come from the fact that I'm not Zulu.
Really?
Yeah. Sputla Sebogodi spoke about it the other day. Wow. And the fact that unless you are a Zulu-speaking actress, the work is diminished. And that's a fact.
Is it?
We don't speak about it often enough, but on paper, it's even a Sotho drama ends up being a Zulu drama. So a drama will start off being completely based in Sotho land and whatever, and slowly the network will say, oh, can you put in more Zulu actors? Can you put in more Zulu actors? Can you put in... So Sotho actors are really having a hard time right now. Yeah. It's become all about
That's
Zulu.
Crazy.
If you look at any show, Zulu dominates.
Of the audience?
It's because of the numbers. It's a numbers game. So because Zulus are... I suppose they've got the numbers. Yeah, they've got the numbers. So advertisers, you come from an advertising. Yeah, advertisers are looking at. But are we reaching the Zulu audience? Are we reaching the Zulu audience? So it's become very tough as a Sotho actress.
So subtitles are not an option?
They are, but remember your South African audience, your every South African audience is not going to be reading subtitles. They want to listen. They're hearing. Yeah. So the mother could be sitting in the kitchen cooking, but if she's hearing something on a Zulu program, she's hearing her language being spoken. So it's become very unfair, I'll be honest with you. So I have found it quite a struggle, the fact that, so what, should I be learning, should I be upping my Zulu game? Yeah.
It is a loyal audience because Ikuze FM, also
every language is loyal.
Yeah.
You speak to Tsonga people, they're loyal to a Tsonga. They would love to hear Tsonga.
Yeah.
Sotho listeners or audience members would love to hear their own language being spoken.
Got it.
So it really is a numbers game. Yeah. It's because they're the most population.
Yeah.
So we're finding it a real struggle to find work as a Sotho actress.
Wow. So then we have to go to English as the option.
Yes, and that's where I'm now finding the work, is when I can combine the Sotho and the English.
English?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. That is interesting. Somebody do something about this.
Yeah.
If you had the power and the means to fix any problem in the South African society, what will it be and why?
The food security issue, the poverty. Oh, did you? We're surrounded by so much poverty. You know, I live literally across the road from Alex, and you just see desolation, you see despair, because this country is not what we signed up for. It has turned into almost an enemy of the people. The very country that we all love as South Africans, and regardless of race, creed, or color, or sexual orientation, everybody loves this country. But this country, in a way, has let us down. So my fear is 5 years from now, the poor will be poorer than they've ever been. The crime stats will be even higher. The desperation will even be higher. The suicide will be higher. The depression will be higher. And I'm an optimist. So when an optimist is saying, yo, the future of this country is not looking great at all. It is looking so bleak. The industry is not what it used to be. I cannot get the rates that I used to get 10 years ago. I mean, 10 years ago, I'm earning the same amount of money.
And with inflation and everything.
You have producers who are driving Rolls Royce and Bentleys. Yes. Yeah. So it's always, I think that the food security element, I think I would empower farmers. I would, there's no, I don't understand why we're importing stuff that's already grown in South Africa.
Just the quantity is not enough. But also I just think like city gardens. We don't really put much stock into a different way. If you think that the traditional way of living, Africans were quite healthy.
Very. My great-grandmother lived to be 98.
And I think majority of us were vegetarian. We used to eat meat once in a while.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's just some of those practices.
But it is organic, you see.
Yes.
So if I go to my grandmother's homestead in Goa, in Butterworth, they still grow their own mealies. So everything is organic. It's just that now organic has become expensive. So if you're buying organic stuff in the city, it's a lot more expensive. And yet if you're going into your rural areas, organic is, it's just there.
Gosh, I don't know how we're going to overcome this.
We need to change governments. Did I say that out loud? Yeah, we need to change the leadership. Maybe not governments, but the leadership.
Mm.
The leadership has to be driven by what is good for the people.
Yes.
So my dad was a feminist. My dad used to believe if this world is run by women, it would be a completely different world. Mm. Yeah.
Oh, our lovely dads, I tell you. What legacy would you love to leave in the world?
That I was passionate about anything that I did.
Mm.
Be it, I was passionate about being an aunt, being a sister, being a daughter, being a mother, being a partner. Being an actress, being a friend. Yeah, she was just passionate. There was a passionate human being walking. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And that's my legacy. And then, mind you, that's a legacy that's been passed on from my dad.
Yeah.
As you said, that quote earlier, it says if you've lost passion for what you do, then you're not doing anyone a favor. Rather stop. So if I've lived my life with passion in everything that I do, then that's my legacy.
What's still on your bucket list to do?
Okay, I'm never going to bungee jump.
Yeah.
Because I have a fear of heights on another level.
Yeah.
What to do? I just want to travel. I was speaking to a friend earlier and I just said, I just want to make enough money to be able to just travel. You know, my younger sister used to have, you know, remember the global thing, and she would just... Yeah. Literally, she'll just spin it.
Yeah.
And then she'll just pick a country and that's where she goes. I'd love to be able to do that. Be it Alaska, be it like a remote country that you've never even heard of. Yeah, like a, you know, not Latvia, but like a Lithuania somewhere. And it's a different culture and it's a different language. I think I haven't done enough traveling. Mm-hmm. That will always be on my bucket list. Yeah. It will always keep propping up on my bucket list.
Sometimes I get concerned when I return to the same destination. I'm like, there's so much else to see in the world. But then you have friends that you go.
But what's the most remote place you've ever been?
I don't know. I don't think I have been to a remote place.
Iceland? No.
No. I'd like to do the Northern Stars, but no remote.
Yeah. So travel's also on your bucket list.
I love traveling, but that's why I get concerned when I go to some of the places. So we're talking about returning to Spain. I'm like, okay, I've done Spain. I need to. I haven't really seen.
I'd love to see a little bit of Spain.
Yeah. So I'd love to go to Timbuktu. I'd love to go to North Korea.
Oh, hello.
Yeah. Just fascination with human beings.
And also different cultures.
Yes.
Like different cultures, different. Yeah. So the interesting thing about my family is that no one's married to. So my brother's wife was Zulu.
Mm-hmm.
My mom was Xhosa. My dad's Sudu.
Mm-hmm.
My brother's married to Mshangani. So no one in the family has actually married.
Another race.
No.
Another tribe.
We have.
The nice thing about our family is that you can't be you can't be prejudiced against other ethnic groups.
No, because my family itself. So family gatherings was like Venda, Sudu, Zulu, Xhosa. Yeah, it's very difficult to be like.
Anyway.
It's very embracing.
I could chat to you forever. As we close our conversation today, what wisdom would you like to leave us with? What is it that you like? If this is the last conversation we have.
And that's a lesson from my mother.
Yeah.
Right? So my mother was, her thing was, it's always got to come from a kind source. So you've heard of Rumi's.
Yeah.
Before you say anything, is it kind? Mm-hmm. Is it necessary? Is it the truth? And my mother lived that. So am I being kind to Dudu right now? Am I being kind as I walk out? Am I being kind to the parking attendant? Am I being kind to the receptionist?
Yeah.
So if everything emanates from a kind place, this world might be different.
It could.
Yeah, because then you're almost being kind to you.
Yeah.
By being kind to another person, you're being kind to yourself. And my mother lived it. She just exuded it. Like, and I used to think, how does this woman not tire of being kind to everybody that she comes across?
Mm.
So if I can do everything from a kind base, that's something that I would leave to the world.
And spread it.
Yeah, and spread it some more.
Yeah. We could use a world like this.
Yeah, there's a beautiful word in Afrikaans for spray. It's so lovely because it's literally like,
and you can
like you're spreading the kindness. Yeah. So let's spray the kindness.
Yeah.
That's
the perfect way to leave this conversation.
Thank you, Dudu.
Until next time.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Wisdom Personified, Conversations with Dudum Somi. Please also like, follow and subscribe to our channel and share the wisdom with your friends. I would love it if you could rate and review as well. Wisdom Personified, Conversations with Dudum Somi is also available on YouTube, Facebook Watch, Apple and Google Podcasts, as well as Spotify. Enjoy the wisdom journey.